Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janavallabha Kirivaradhari. Gopi Janavallabha Girivaradhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Jaya Radhe Shyam. Jaya Krishna Balaram, Jaya Krishna Balaram, Jaya Krishna Balaram, Jaya Krishna Balaram. Jaya Goranitai, Jaya Goranitai, Jaya Goranitai, Jaya Goranitai. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada. Prabhupada ki jai. Jai Om Vishnupada Paramahamsa Parivajakacharya Astotara Sata Shri Shimada Zivayam Gray Shila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Shila Prabhupada ki jai. Shrimad Bhagavatam ki jai. All glories to the assembly of devotees. All glories to the assembly of devotees. All glories to the assembly of devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna. We're reading from the third canto, chapter 21, text 12. Jata Harsho Patan Murna. Kshito Labdha Manorataha. Girbhis Tva Bhyagrinat Priti. Swabhavatma Kritanjali. Please chant. Jata Harsha Patan Murna. Shita Labdha Manorata. Girbhis Tva Bhyagrinat Priti. Swabhavatma Kritanjali. Jata Harsho Patan Murna. Kshito Labdha Manorata. Girbhis Tva Bhyagrinat Priti. Swabhavatma Kritanjali. Jata Harsho Patan Murna. Kshito Labdha Manorata. Vaishnavis? Jata Harsho Patan Murna. Kshito Labdha Manorata. Girbhis Tva Bhyagrinat Priti. Swabhavatma Kritanjali. Jata Harsha. Jata Harsha Patan Murna. Kshito Labdha Manorata. Girbhis Tva Bhyagrinat Priti. Swabhavatma Kritanjali. Jata Harsha. Naturally jubilant. Apatat, he fell down. Murna, with his head. Kshitau, on the ground. Labdha, having been achieved. Manarataha, his desire. Girbhi, with prayers. Tu, and. Abhyagrinat, he satisfied. Priti Swabhava Atma, whose heart is by nature always full of love. Krita Anjali, with folded hands. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. When Kardama Muni actually realized the Supreme Personality of Godhead in person, he was greatly satisfied because his transcendental desire was fulfilled. He fell on the ground with his head bowed to offer obeisances unto the lotus feet of the Lord. His heart naturally full of love of God, with folded hands, he satisfied the Lord with prayers. Please repeat. When Kardama Muni actually realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead in person, he was greatly satisfied because his transcendental desire was fulfilled. He fell on the ground with his head bowed to offer obeisances unto the lotus feet of the Lord. His heart, naturally full of love of God, with folded hands he satisfied the Lord with prayers. So before I read the purport, I wanted to, Hare Krishna, good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for being here. And before anything, I want to ask for the blessings of the senior devotees and offer my apologies to the senior devotees and those more intelligent than me for you having to sit and listen to me. But I'm begging for your blessings that I can speak something that will benefit all of us in Krishna consciousness. So before I read the purport, I just wanted to say something that it's not necessarily regarding what's in the purport, but related to the purport and just preparing for class in general. So this is the third class on this same purport, because the purport was rather long. And I was thinking, though I've read it a couple of times, and I feel like it's shrunk. And I was thinking that when the purport is very long, you know, what happens for me anyway, is that I see it and I think, oh my God, it's so long, you know. And and why is that? Where does that come from? One is because for the most part, people have short attention spans, and to kind of, you know, the idea of, oh, I have to go through this whole thing and it's so long and my mind is going to wander. And also there's the lack of taste. You know, if we have a lack of taste for Bhagavatam, then we see the purport, if it's long and it brings some, maybe might bring some anxiety. And I was thinking that's similar to japa. You know, like we heard the other day where Ram Govinda was speaking about, you know, wanting to be finished. And so it's kind of similar thing with when the purport is long, that I might be thinking that, oh, I want to hurry up and get through it, or it's going to take too long. So it was broken up. And then another experience that I had when I was sitting in class on Friday that I wanted to share was that, so the idea was the first person reads the first paragraph and speaks on that. And then the next person gives class, they speak on the second paragraph. And then the third person, and like that. So Mitra Sen Prabhu, he gave class on Friday, and he read through the whole purport, and he spoke, you know, in general on everything. And so I was sitting there, and I was thinking, oh, this is terrible. You know, there won't be anything left for me to say, and like that, because, you know, in my mind, it's like something is supposed to be a certain way. It has to be that way, and you can't step out of that. You know, and so I was having like a little meltdown there. But then a little voice came and reminded me that, you know, we hear that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, for example, he spoke on the first verse of the Bhagavatam, and they say it was maybe 3 months or something along those lines that he was speaking just about that first verse, because there's so much in there. And of course, we know that Srila Prabhupada, he wanted for us to study the Bhagavatam and to see it, from different angles. So it's nice that, you know, to look at the same verse, that there's different devotees speaking on it. And there's so many things that can be said about the same verse, same purport. Yeah, and I was thinking that everything about Srimad Bhagavatam, because Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of Krishna, and Krishna wants us to grow spiritually so that we can be qualified to come back to him. So anything regarding the Bhagavatam is that that intention is there. It's for us to grow and to become closer to Krishna. And so even if whether we're reading, whether we're hearing Bhagavatam, whether, maybe sometimes it might just kind of be, we're listening, it's in the background, but we're multitasking, doing other things. Either way, there's always something to be benefited, some benefit to be had. And one other thing about that too is when internal meltdowns come, which was interesting that we heard a little bit in yesterday's class by Rasa Sindhu Prabhu about that. And I was thinking, yeah, when the meltdowns come that we have, we can know what to do and how to react if we're hearing from the Chaitya Guru. And I was reading in the Bhagavad Gita about, because I used to think, oh, Chaitya Guru, that's something you have to be super advanced for. But the thing is, what Prabhupada says in one purport in the Gita is that how do we become advanced enough to hear the Chaitya Guru? It just means that we have to hear first, we have to hear from Sadhu, Sastra, and the Guru outside of our body. So it means we hear from Srila Prabhupada, we hear from the Acharyas, we hear from our own spiritual masters, Shiksha Guru, Diksha Guru. We follow Srila Prabhupada's teachings regularly. And then as time goes on, the Chaitya Guru becomes louder. He becomes louder. So I feel like, you know, he was kind of calming me down when I was sitting there. And once we can hear, and the importance also, the difference, I should say, between the gurus on the outside and the guru on the inside is that the guru on the inside, that's who's with you all the time. So he helps us with the application of what we read in the Bhagavatam, because, you know, in the moment something happens and your guru is not necessarily going to be there. And so, but the Chaitya Guru is there to remind you of what you have been hearing already before from the outside gurus, so to speak, and the Shastra. So I just wanted to share that. Okay, and that's my long-winded way of saying that I am going to read the whole purport, because as I say, what great men do, others will follow. So since Mitra Sen Prabhu did that, I'm going to read the whole purport. But then I'll focus on two main points from the last verse. Okay, or not the last verse. Sorry, the last paragraph. I mean. Okay, purport by Divine Grace. Plus, one more thing. Yeah. Sorry. I was thinking that, I want to be in the mindset that when I see these long purports, that I think, oh, wow, Srila Prabhupada, he had so much to say about this verse, and I want to be excited to see what that is. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The realization of the personal form of the Lord is the highest perfectional stage of yoga. In the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where yoga practice is described, this realization of the personal form of the Lord is called the perfection of yoga. After practicing the sitting postures and other regulative principles of the system, one finally reaches the stages of samadhi, absorption in the Supreme. In the samadhi stage, one can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his partial form as Paramatma, or as he is. Samadhi is described in authoritative yoga scriptures, such as the Patanjali Sutras, to be a transcendental pleasure. The yoga system described in the books of Patanjali is authoritative, and the modern so-called yogis who have manufactured their own ways, not consulting the authorities, are simply ludicrous. The Patanjali yoga system is called Ashtanga Yoga. Sometimes impersonalists pollute the Patanjali yoga system because they are monists. Patanjali describes that the soul is transcendentally pleased when he meets the supersoul and sees him. If the existence of the supersoul and the individual is admitted, then the impersonalist theory of monism is nullified. Therefore, some impersonalists and void philosophers twist the Patanjali system in their own way and pollute the whole yoga process. According to Patanjali, when one becomes free from all material desires, he attains his real transcendental situation, and realization of that stage is called spiritual power. In material activities, a person engages in the modes of material nature. The aspirations of such people are, one, to be religious, two, to be economically enriched, three, to be able to gratify the senses, and at last, four, to become one with the Supreme. According to the monists, when a yogi becomes one with the Supreme and loses his individual existence, he attains the highest stage called Kaivalya. But actually, the stage of realization of the personality of Godhead is Kaivalya. The oneness of understanding that the Supreme Lord is fully spiritual and that in full spiritual realization, one can understand what he is, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is called Kaivalya, or in the language of Patanjali, realization of spiritual power. His proposal is that when one is freed from material desires and fixed in spiritual realization of the self and the superself, that is called Chit Shakti. In full spiritual realization, there is a perception of spiritual happiness, and that happiness is described in Bhagavad Gita as the supreme happiness, which is beyond the material senses. Trance is described to be of two kinds, sampragyata and asampragyata, or mental speculation and self-realization. In samadhi or asampragyata, one can realize by his spiritual senses the spiritual form of the Lord. That is the ultimate goal of spiritual realization. And the final paragraph. According to Patanjali, when one is fixed in constant realization of the supreme form of the Lord, one has attained the perfectional stage as attained by Kardama Muni. Unless one attains this stage of perfection, beyond the perfection of the preliminaries of the yoga system, there is no ultimate realization. There are 8 perfections in the Ashtanga yoga system. One who has attained them can become lighter than the lightest and greater than the greatest, and he can achieve whatever he likes. But even achieving such material success in yoga is not the perfection or the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is described here. Kardama Muni saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his eternal form. Devotional service begins with the relationship of the individual soul and the Supreme Soul, or Krishna, and Krishna's devotees. And when one attains it, there is no question of falling down. If, through the yoga system, one wants to attain the stage of seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face, but is attracted instead to attainment of some material power, then he is detoured from proceeding further. Material enjoyment, as encouraged by bogus yogis, has nothing to do with the transcendental realization of spiritual happiness. Real devotees of bhakti yoga accept only the material necessities of life absolutely needed to maintain the body and soul together. They refrain completely from all exaggerated material sense gratification. They are prepared to undergo all kinds of tribulation, provided they can make progress in the realization of the personality of Godhead. Om Gyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatile Shatarine. Okay, so in one of the points that I wanted to expand on a little bit from that last paragraph was just about Patanjali's yoga system, and which we heard in the previous classes, and we heard again in the purport that it's a bona fide system. It's just that it's been some things have been cut out in order to by the impersonalists. So, but actually, the whole purpose is to be able to see Krishna, and to and then beyond that, to actually interact with him. So sometimes there are changes can be brought about, like the system is bona fide, but then changes are brought about for different reasons. Sometimes they're brought about because there's a desire to make the system more popular, so that more people will be interested in it. But sometimes this can be this is like a form of cheating, and we know that Prabhupada says that unfortunately people like to be cheated, and he gave the example of the example was that if there's a man who knows how to bark like a dog and he becomes really expert at it. And so people will pay money to go and see this man because, wow, he can bark just like a dog. But then out in the street, the dog is there barking and no one cares for the dog barking in the street. And the real thing, so he's saying, Prabhupada, the real thing is there, but people are not attracted to it because it just seems, you know, it doesn't seem exciting or interesting, or maybe it seems too hard. So then that desire to get something easily and cheaply is there. But actually, Prabhupada came to give us Krishna, along with the bona fide method by which we can achieve him. And so we have to do our best to follow that method. I have to regularly check in with myself to see if I'm practicing what Prabhupada has given us, and am I following the standard? And if not, then how far am I, and what do I need to do to move forward and get closer to following the standard? So this is our personal introspection that needs to be done regularly. And also we make relationships with devotees, and we help each other, you know, also in the same way. We can tell each other, you know, you're going off the mark. You need to be careful about what you're doing there. So that's very important. Sometimes I think that I wonder if maybe, you know, as devotees we might get comfortable in thinking, like in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asked that question, what happens to the devotee who, you know, if we don't make it all the way in this life, what happens? And so Krishna explains that, okay, well, we pick up where we left off, and the soul takes birth in could be a very well-to-do family, respectable family, or a devotee family, and they get the opportunity to practice, again, Krishna consciousness with maybe with fewer hindrances. But the thing is, we don't want to just rely on that. I mean, it's good, it's wonderful that it's there, but when we go into another body, we also take with us that pesky free will. And that free will can cause us to, you know, make choices that are not necessarily in our best interest. So it's good to know that, you know, the opportunity will come again, but it's best if we can, you know, be as serious as possible and try, make that the goal, that to try to become fully God conscious in this life and not, you know, take too much shelter in, well, in my next life, you know, I'll do this, I'll do that. Krishna consciousness is actually very full of pleasure. Even for a person who's not so committed to sadhana, anyone can come and sit and participate in the kirtan. Like last night, there was such a nice kirtan, and I just, you know, it was nice to just sit and chant. It was very sweet. Or anyone can come and get prasadam, and you don't even have to pay. I mean, you know, you go to a restaurant, you don't know what's happening, if they're even washing their hands or whatever. You have to pay so much money. And there's so much, you know, the karma that goes with that. You can come here and have the nice brahmanas cooking, and you know, of course, it's nice to always give a donation, but if you don't have, you're not going to be turned away. So there's so many nice things about Krishna consciousness for someone who's not even so serious. It's just there and available. What to speak of when a person is very, very dedicated, how much more pleasure there is available. I think of like the six Goswamis, for example, who performed so many austerities. It seems like, you know, from our perspective or from my perspective, it seems like, oh, they were so austere. They didn't, you know, they wouldn't sleep. They slept maybe 1 or 2 hours, it says, and they hardly would eat even. But it actually, from, you know, from the perspective of me, the wanting to be the enjoyer, that seems like so hard to do. But from the perspective, from their perspective, it wasn't that they were purposefully not eating or purposefully not sleeping and it was a chore. It was because they were so, what was the word? I heard one devotee. They were at a level of self-forgetfulness. And I like that term so much, self-forgetfulness. Because they were so absorbed in Krishna consciousness. They were so absorbed in Krishna. They had this task from Lord Chaitanya that, you know, they had to uncover all these holy places, and they were going to write down all the instructions, like we're hearing on Saturdays, that Lord Chaitanya had given to them. And so they were fully absorbed in that. So that was giving them so much pleasure that they weren't thinking about, oh, I'm hungry, I need to eat. And we've had that experience also to a lesser degree. I'm sure everyone has had that, where you're just really absorbed in something and you stay up really late, or you just, you know, you don't even eat because you're so absorbed in that thing. So that's what it is for the pure devotee. They're so absorbed in Krishna. So then, you know, like we hear in the last paragraph about the person who's willing to do anything to become Krishna conscious, it's not really, I mean, it, Yeah, it's not really so difficult because when the attraction is there, you know, they're so attracted, so the other things are become less important. So it's a natural thing, and it's not, you know, it sounds difficult for those of us or like me who are still very materially attached. So that was one point. And then the other point that I wanted to bring out a little more was just expand on those eight mystic processes, mystic yoga processes. So that's mentioned a lot also. Prabhupada brings that up in the purport. And then he comes to the conclusion, of course, that those things are there and they can be had, but none of that compares to the loving relationship with Krishna. So in the 11th canto, in the 15th chapter, Krishna is expanding on these processes to Uddhava. So I just want to read through, and there's eight main ones, and then there are 10 sort of less important. So there's 18, and this comes from the 15th chapter. This is starting from the third verse, and I'll just read the list here. The masters of the yoga system have declared that there are 18 types of mystic perfection and meditation, of which 8 are primary. Having taken shelter in me, this is Krishna speaking, and 10 are secondary, appearing from the material mode of goodness. So the 8, let's see. So 3, the 3 by which one transforms one's body are anima, becoming smaller than the smallest, mahima, becoming greater than the greatest, and lagima, becoming lighter than the lightest. Through the perfection of prapti, one acquires whatever one desires. And through prakamya siddhi, one experiences any enjoyable object, either in this world or the next. Through ishita siddhi, one can manipulate the sub-potencies of maya. And through the controlling potency called vashita siddhi, one is unimpeded by the three modes of nature. One who has acquired kamavasayita siddhi can obtain anything from anywhere to the highest possible limit. My dear gentle Uddhava, these 8 mystic perfections are considered to be naturally existing and unexcelled within this world. And Prabhupada says in the purport that that's because they originally exist in Krishna. And then the 10 secondary ones arising from the modes of nature are the powers of freeing oneself from hunger and thirst and other bodily disturbances, hearing and seeing things far away, moving the body at the speed of the mind, assuming any form one desires, entering the bodies of others, dying when one desires, like Bhishmadev, witnessing the pastimes between the demigods and the celestial girls called apsaras, completely executing one's determination and giving orders whose fulfillment is unimpeded. Oh, that's the one that every parent wishes that they could have. Then there's the power to know the past, present, and future, tolerance of heat, cold, and other dualities, knowing the minds of others, checking the influence of fire, sun, water, poison, and so on, and remaining unconquered by others. These constitute 5 perfections of the mystic process of yoga and meditation. And then Krishna goes on to explain, he goes on to expand on those and explain what you have to do to acquire those. But again, he comes to the conclusion that, you know, none of that is really so important. And we've heard, for example, Prabhupada speaking about this, the ability to be able to enter into stone. And he said that the materialists, some of these they're already able to do without any mystic yoga process. And he gave the example of the subways in New York City. So that's, you know, they dig into the stone, they break it up, and they create this whole system underneath. So, you know, all these things are there. And then another example too, and then and we see that when the person takes to Krishna consciousness and they become pure in their Krishna consciousness, all these things come also without any extraneous endeavor. For example, this idea of being able to protect, being protected from any kind of harm or injury. I was thinking of Prahlad Maharaj and how, you know, he didn't practice any yoga for that. He just had so much deep love for Krishna and was always remembering Krishna that, or Lord Narayan, that, you know, no matter what they did to his body, there was no injury for him. So these things, for the pure devotee, these things can, they just kind of come along. They can be there without any outside, with any extra endeavor. And ultimately, in the end, they can be very troublesome. We see like the demigods have many of these abilities, and still there's always problems. You know, they're fighting amongst each other. They're fighting the demons. And they always, and in the end, they always have to take shelter of Krishna, even though they have, you know, so many of these mystic yoga powers. And then I was thinking that this idea of being able to acquire things from far away, just like that, we're kind of imitating that. Anyone have any idea of how we are doing that? Yes, Amazon, exactly. You know, you just see it online, you press a few keys here and there, and then it's at your house, maybe even the next day sometimes. So, you know, but again, not used in Krishna consciousness, then these things are troublesome. I remember I read even the materialists have some understanding of that. I read a story to my students many years ago about a little boy who he wished, he had like three wishes or whatever, and he wished that his dog could talk. And then when the dog spoke to him, all he did was complain about his food, he complained about the bed that he had, and then eventually everything that he wished for, he had to wish to not have those things because they all, you know, brought some kind of misery. So ultimately the idea is that we want to put in our best efforts because we want to have that experience of Kardama Muni, of seeing Krishna face to face, of interacting with him, of serving him, you know, and serving his devotees. So then we perform these austerities, but, you know, like getting up early in the morning. But they're not really austerities because, if we think about what is my goal? What is it that I'm trying to achieve? And what I'm trying to achieve is something that's so wonderful. And really, it's a little thing. Like giving up a little sleep is really nothing compared to what I'll be getting in exchange. So to read the verse again, when Kardama Muni actually realized the Supreme Personality of Godhead in person, he was greatly satisfied because his transcendental desire was fulfilled. He fell on the ground with his head bowed to offer obeisances unto the lotus feet of the Lord. His heart, naturally full of love, with folded hands, he satisfied the Lord with prayers. Jai. Any questions, comments, corrections?
Hare Bol.
Hare Krishna.
So yeah, we've been dwelling on this verse for a few days. Because when I looked at it, I was going to tell you, oh, we did that last week. Yeah. But then not knowing that we had to do it like three times. What is interesting, this yoga system, all these achievements are byproduct of achieving the Lord. But yet they're interesting. You know, and a lot of yogis, even Kardama Muni, it stated when Devahuti asked for stuff, it stated he brought stuff from all over the universe, you know, to that garden. So that was interesting. And even today now, there are some schools of yoga, they're teaching to train the mind to like move objects. Bend spoon and different kind of thing. And you actually can see it now. And some of these students are reading your mind, can tell you what you're thinking. Some of them are, you could draw stuff here, and they would tell you what you've drawn. You see? So these things, they're practical, really, and you could see. I mean, if science may argue that it's fake and mythology, but you could actually see real experience of these things. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But of course, everything we want to use in Krishna's service. So if someone has such types of ability, if they can use it in Krishna's service, then great. But if not, then it's not helpful.
Yes, Prabhu. I was thinking, I was reading somewhere from one of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's books, and it was speaking about like anarthas, and it gave like one category of anarthas was these cities. And so I was thinking, like, makes sense, because I mean, I would like to hear what you have to say, but I was thinking, like, yeah, I mean, if we have another way of convincing ourselves that we're the controller of our environment and the factors that play, then that's, yeah, and just another thing that's keeping me from being submissive and trying to love Krishna.
Yeah, yeah, and that's also, Prabhupada mentions that in the purport, that we can get caught up, and then it becomes a detour, and we're detoured from the goal, because, yeah, it can be very, intoxicating, you know, if I know I can read somebody's mind, or whatever, then there's that tendency that I start thinking it means I'm better than others. But we know that Prabhupada, someone asked him what about his mystic potencies, you know, or can he do, what miracle can he perform? And you know, he said, this is my miracle, that I can take people who know nothing about Krishna and maybe not even interested and have no background there, and then kind of change them to wanting to become very serious devotees. And that miracle is still happening, you know, it's still continuing. Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu, go ahead.
Well, I was thinking, you know, maybe if we could actually read other people's minds, that would be humbling, because then we'd find out what people actually think about us.
Or you can develop a relationship with that person, and they can just tell you. Yeah.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So again, I think one of the key words in the purport, one of many of the key words, was relationship. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think, okay, what is getting in the way of me actually wanting? What fear do I have of actually wanting a more personal relationship with Krishna? And then when you read the last line, you also picked up on that, about how they're willing to go through these tribulations in order to have more realization of who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I wonder what is in my subconscious that's not really allowing, you know, me to just embrace Krishna. And you know, I go through, you know, I can put on the devotional clothing, I can do, you know, all those things expressing a desire to get closer to Krishna. But again, I also know that there's something
like something that holds you back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, like I'm sitting here, and anyway, I woke up this morning with some pain that I haven't felt before, and tomorrow I dress. And I'm just asking Krishna, please give me at least till tomorrow so that I can touch your body again and somehow try to get closer to you. Mm-hmm. Because I know this body is going to, you know, fail me. And so I, you know, so I hope he at least, you know, grants me the desire to, you know, show up and render some service for him tomorrow. You know, so anyway, and one other thing is that there was one part where it says, you know, just accepting what's necessary to keep the body and mm-hmm. soul together. Mm-hmm. There's only a couple of personalities that I know in ISKCON that I've had the association with that I can see that that is their mindset. You know, that is how they live their life. And I know there was a time when Prabhupada wrote a letter, and he was, after visiting New Vrindavan a couple of times, and he had made the comment that New Vrindavan could be even more exemplary than Vrindavan, because even in Vrindavan, materialism has kind of set in. And so, you know, of course, after Prabhupada's palace was, you know, had manifested, it just seemed like the austerities and everything that was being performed there, even though it's a beautiful preaching, you know, opportunity to share Prabhupada with the rest of the world, and but it also seems like our consciousness went from that living just to keep body and soul together and the Krishna in the center, kind of expanded outward, and we haven't reeled it back in yet, you know, to actually live the life that Prabhupada envisioned for, you know,
yeah,
for such a dham, for yeah, such a holy place. Yeah.
And that's actually another point that could have been expanded on. I mean, there could be another class on this purport, because, yeah, that's also very important, the idea of only living enough to keep body and soul together, and what does that mean? And I kind of was thinking too that that's it can, I mean, we're not living all together in that sense, so it has to be like an individual thing, you know, like each person has to kind of look at and see, you know, do I have too much stuff, basically, you know, how can I cut down, you know, how can I make, what can I do to make my life more simpler? What is it that's keeping me, like, you know, do I have too many clothes and trying to, am I spending too much time managing all of my things, and is that keeping me away from Krishna, or, you know, keeping me from going to the temple or keeping me from whatever. So that's another thing that, yeah, it has to. We have to kind of all look at that and see what can I do? What else do I need to do to get to that level of just? And it can't be artificial, right. You know. But yes, that's a very important point.
I think that the what Prabhupada stressed in that letter also was that if we stayed austere, you would only attract those.
Mm.
Yeah, because Krishna attracts everyone, right? Eventually, and we all come in with our baggage, we all come in with our motives, we all come in with, you know. So I think part of it was like if there had that element of, I mean, literally, it's pretty extreme austerities, you know, then you would only attract the ascetics, you know, you would only attract those that really are in a mindset to want to know Krishna, and not just what Krishna has to offer us, but to know Krishna personally. That was another thought I got. I've been doing a lot of driving lately.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, there's also, I mean, that's why I say it's a personal thing, because we also don't want it to be so austere, because Prabhupada said that he made, you know, these opulent temples to attract people, you know, to attract all types of people. So, but then, of course, we do want to take, this is where we don't want to cheat them. We want to take those people from that lower level up to a higher level. So the opulence is also important. It's nice to have.
Yeah. I guess with my driving lately, I've been thinking, like, okay, am I attracted to Krishna because of the things that he offers and because of the, you know, or am I really attracted to Krishna even if he takes all those things away?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so again, like you say, it's definitely an individual journey, you know. And so anyway, thank you.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Regarding mystic cities,
mm-hmm.
I was thinking, actually, they have such an appeal. I mean, even sometimes we're quite amazed, mm-hmm. you know, and wondering, wow, wouldn't that be nice, you know? But actually, it's a subtle sex life, mm-hmm. the desire for fame, adoration, mm-hmm. and distinction.
Mm-hmm.
It's all that, because one does glean fame and mm-hmm. adoration and mm-hmm. distinction from mm-hmm. it, you know, mm-hmm. these things.
Yeah. Thank you.
First, I'd like to thank you and express appreciation for this thing that you said, which is, oh my God. It's important to reflect sometimes and ask ourselves, am I following Prabhupada's standard? And if what can I do or what needs to be done to improve there?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like closing a year, mm-hmm. we should do it all of the time, but closing mm-hmm. a year is a really great opportunity to mm-hmm. reflect the year in a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of conversation also kind of reiterates the benefit of taking time at this moment
mm-hmm.
to really do that for ourselves, for what we've offered to others, et cetera. So I appreciate this point at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I also had a question about Chaita Guru in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So reflecting back on my own life, I feel like at times, particularly when I was even younger, I felt maybe closer or a more personal relationship with God, not calling him Krishna at mm-hmm. that time. And then as life has changed and brought different circumstances and, you know, my relationship has gone away and then come closer, I'm like, or my personal connection has felt sometimes closer, sometimes further away. And so I'm curious, is this, do we have periods where we are just closer or further away, or do we only ever get closer? Can we bring in a relationship from a previous life and then make choices because of that darn personal choice situation? Choose to pull away, you know, how to understand, at least from my personal experience, how that might ebb and flow.
Well, I mean, I can say for my, in my own personal experience, I'm not sure that, but yeah, just that you know, there's times when I'm more covered than others, and the modes of nature are there, and I'm not, unfortunately, I'm still subject to them. So, yeah, so sometimes, so what I find is that I have to sometimes wait a little. Like, I might think a certain way about something, but then later on I realize that, maybe I was more covered in that moment. So just being, knowing that can happen, and so just being careful and patient.
Yeah. So in that experience with Chaitanya Guru, I mean, sometimes when I think it also allows me, because I've heard instruction and not followed it, even in very simplistic things, not even in big Krishna conscious way, but just in everyday living, hearing an instruction, and then for some reason thinking I know better due to false ego and not doing that, and then Krishna showing me, you know, my way ended up this way, his way would have had a different result, you know.
Yeah, that's part of the process.
And then I feel like when you just say that, the more you, I won't say argue with voice, but at least put your two cents in, it almost seems like Krishna says, or Chaitanya Guru says, well, okay, if you don't want my guidance, then, so he becomes more quiet. Mm-hmm. And then it's a matter of
then
pleading
the
with him again and saying, no, I want to do it your way. I've seen my way, you know.
Yeah, but just again, to reiterate, first, there definitely has to be that connection, you know, the bona fide connection
guru,
with
yes,
the guru has to
course.
Be there, you know, and always the studying, the reading, and applying, and
yes.
Yeah.
He's someone that introduces you to.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.